Good evening. I call to order the Monroe Public Schools Board of Education meeting. Today is December 9th, 2025. The time is 7 p.m. Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Sorrentini.
Here.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Bluewell.
Here.
Can we please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin, a couple of notes. Please note that this meeting is being live streamed and recorded. There are two cameras in this evening, one focused on the Board of Education and another may be used during the public commentary and presentations. By participating in this meeting, you acknowledge that you may be captured on video. As a reminder, if you wish to address the board, I think most of you have already filled out the forms there in the back corner and hand them to Jamie, our administrative assistant. Also, another comment is some of the items on the agenda tonight we will go through fairly quickly, but just for your information, we have thoroughly discussed and vetted these during our work sessions, which are open to the public, and you're certainly welcome to attend. Superintendent Shaw, are there any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening?
We have none tonight, sir.
Oh, hold on. I think you want to move.
Not
well,
to consent.
We'll do that. Okay, we'll
consent.
Do that second. Okay. Then can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Move to approve the agenda as presented.
Can I get a support?
Support.
Any discussion? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
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 Yes. And the motion carries. I'll now turn it over to Superintendent Shaw for his initial comments.
Okay, so the only one I have on this, our first one is tonight, the Board of Education, we presented you with some gifts that were put together from Sodexo and from the administrative building as an appreciation for your service and just to say Merry Christmas to you guys. And,
yeah.
So
thank you so very much. Extend our thanks to Sodexo as well.
Well, we gladly will.
Yeah. Okay, public commentary for board agenda items only. Do we have any,
no,
Carrie?
We have some for later in the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Next is board discussion and action items. We have our contracted services and resignations report. Is there any discussion or questions regarding the contracted services and resignations report?
I just want to make a note that in our previous session, we did discuss information that is included in these reports, and we're going to be following up on some of that information at our next meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Next are our next is our consent agenda. Are there any items that the board members would like to have moved off the consent agenda and moved to the new business?
Yes, I'd like to remove item 2C, Monroe High School Boys Basketball Overnight Lock-In Fundraiser, and move it to new business, please.
Okay, then can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda with item C3, move to new business?
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda with item 2C, move to new business.
Okay, do we have support?
Support.
Any discussion? Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Sabatini.
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Yes, and the motion carries. We will address that at the end of new business then.
Usually goes the first item.
Yeah, you want to do it first?
We are
okay.
First, yep.
Fair enough. Okay, then we will address the Monroe High School Boys Basketball Overnight Lock-In Fundraiser. Can I get a motion to approve that overnight lock-in?
I move to approve the Monroe High School boys basketball overnight lock-in at Monroe High School for boys in grades 4 to 6 from December 20th to 21st, 2025, 6 p.m. to 9 a.m., according to the terms and policies of the Monroe Public Schools Board of Education.
Can I get support?
Support.
Okay, discussion. Mr. Malapsi, do you want to, your name is associated with that, so anything to discuss before we get into questions?
No.
Okay. Any discussion or questions from board members?
Yes, I pulled this because as I was looking at it, I don't recall having done a lock-in for the younger students that we're talking about. There's a whole bunch of logistical stuff I could see being an issue with that. The second thing is it's asking for additional operating costs. So I would like to know what items in the budget that we do not have money for that this is seeking, because operational costs are a different thing. So raising money for something random is different than raising money for an operational cost. And so I have an objection related on that topic as well.
I think that the objection, similar to the objection that Darla just brought up, I don't recall ever hearing about a lock-in. Lock-ins to me bring in a lot of, I don't know if liability is the word, because it's not liable, but a lot of scenarios that could be, you know, you got boys that at a younger age, so fighting, that type of stuff. I can see some of that stuff happening. So I'm just, worst case scenario in my mind, I'm not completely on board with that. I guess I'm a little bit concerned about that. I also like to, what do we have an idea? We think how many people are going to attend? So how much money do we think we're actually going to raise?
Yes. I could answer those questions.
Is on the paper? Sorry.
Yep. Yeah. $1,750 for operating expenses. They cite meals, travel gear, awards for students. We asked for information from Coach Smith about the event. They are expecting, if approved, roughly 40 students. There would be 5 chaperones for those students. And the activities that they have, I spoke with them. They would be keeping the kids busy all evening with different stations, games, activities. And again, it's just for boys. Boys basketball team, and then boys in those specific grades.
I still have the concern of raising money for operational costs. I think that we're getting into an area where we set budgets, we set money amounts, and we're doing constant fundraisers for random things. I do have a big concern on the optics
so
with that.
This is not, the things that he's listing out here are things that we would not pay for as a school.
He said operating cost.
Correct. They're using that term, but if you break down there, talking about like their Thanksgiving dinner, their Christmas dinner,
I see it,
other things, that meals there. And so that it's we would never pay for those gear.
If I can add on to that, any of these fundraisers of this nature, the funds go into their club account that's in that student and school activity fund that's completely separate from the general fund. So that would be additional things that they are wanting to do as a team that are outside of the minimum things that maybe minimum isn't the correct word, outside of the items that the athletic department provides to a sport for that particular season.
We do have Kyle here tonight, and I'm going to put him on the spot if you're okay with that, because the question was raised about any other like lock-ins. Is that something you've seen us do in the past? I mean, you've been here for a long time.
I just don't know from our standpoint if it's something that we should get involved in. I think if you want to raise funds, there's a lot of ways to raise funds. I do have an issue with the amount of fundraisers that they're had in a community, especially coming from one source like us. But I just do not think that this is something that is somewhere where we should want to go.
Couple of questions, David. Is this strictly for Monroe Public School students, or is it open to the general public, kids fourth to sixth grade in the community?
I want to cite, well, I'm going to go to coach out there and phone a friend. I could speculate. I know Mr. Hessen's watching. He may give me that answer, but it does say boys 4 to 6th grade lock-in overnight for boys grades 4 to 6. I would assume that is for Monroe Public students, seeing as we would have some sort of jurisdiction over those students. We would want that. We wouldn't open it up to the community. It would be for our kids, hosted by our basketball coaches. So coaches in our system, students in our system.
Right, because I see it, there's a permission slip or form they have to complete, and I don't know if they have to complete that before they...
And it is only MPS students,
Okay. And the 50, it looks like estimating 50 students, do you know if that's a number? Has he gone around and kind of talked to students, had them talk to their parents?
We did not, because this is the first step, getting your blessing first before getting hopes and dreams.
Okay.
About a night away from parents.
So potentially, if they don't get enough students, they may cancel the event?
Potentially.
Okay, so this is the first step. Okay. Any other questions?
So I just want to make sure that we're looking at all the logistics at this, and I'm looking at a particular person up here. So from a liability standpoint, because it is something that we've not done before, have we thought about all of the other things that could happen as or taken into account everything based on, you know, doing this? Like, I just want to make sure that we're covering everything and we've thought of everything before we start in the trajectory of doing a lock-in with students in school. I don't know.
I'm going to guess, since it says, according to the terms and policies of Monroe Public School Board of Education, that probably covers, that's a kind of a blanket.
Well, I wouldn't say that everything's been thought of.
Jeremy's willing to talk. I'm not a lawyer, so.
You don't know anything about
it. I haven't read the papers, and I haven't had a copy of your insurance policy in front of me. Generally speaking, actions that are sponsored officially by the school district and done in compliance with your policies are what you're paying for your insurance policy for. Your errors and omissions policy is a general umbrella policy. That said, I have not specifically inspected it to see if there's an exclusion for lock-ins.
I think that might be the step to make sure we've covered all that before we approve anything. Let's ensure that there is insurance coverage, liabilities coverage, and all those things are dotted and crossed before we'd say yes to something like this. That's my suggestion.
The timing is going to be a problem because it's December 20th.
But they can do it another day.
I think he chose that date right there because it's right there before, like they chose a date right there, right after school's out, and it's right before the holiday, just having a big activity for families before they go. So you have two choices. You could vote it up or down, or you could make a contingency upon verification by me that we do have the insurance coverage. And if we don't have the insurance coverage for overnight events like this, then the answer would be no. So the insurance company will say, yes, you either have your coverage for a lock-in of this sort, or you don't. And if we don't, we don't. And the answer would be no.
So we do have policy 2430. District-sponsored clubs and activities, and it includes a section in there about extracurriculars, that it basically goes in to say non-curricular student activities that are initiated by parents or other members of the community may be allowed under the provisions of Policy 7510, Use of District Facilities. The board, however, will not assume any responsibility for the planning, conducting, or evaluating of such activities, provide any funds or resources, and allow any member of the district staff to assist in the planning, conducting, evaluating. Now, I don't know if this would be considered a non-curricular activity or if an extracurricular is something different than a non-curricular.
Yeah, because this is really being scheduled and planned by the coach.
Yeah, but it's not part of our curriculum.
It's district staff.
Right. Oh,
it is district staff.
So that makes it precludes it when it says district staff.
Mm-hmm. It said district staff on there?
Yeah. Yes, this is district staff.
Read that section where it said district staff on there again, because I didn't catch that part, Mary.
Okay, sure. So
just that section.
If anybody else would like to follow along,
it's
policy number 2430. And it's titled District-Sponsored Clubs and Activities. So I didn't read the very beginning portion of this, where it basically talks about curricular-related activities that are connected to academics during the school day.
Which this is not.
Right. And then it goes into no curricular-related activity shall be considered under the sponsorship of this board unless it meets one or more of the criteria stated above. Great. So that's not applicable because this isn't a curricular activity.
Right.
Then it goes on to say, such activities, along with extracurricular activities not directly related to courses of study, may be conducted on or off school premises by clubs, associations, and organizations of students sponsored by the board and directed by a staff advisor. Then it goes in to say, the board expressly declines to create a limited open forum for clubs and activities initiated by students that cannot meet one of the four criteria listed above, which is basically the subject matter is actually taught or will be taught in regularly covered course. The subject matter concerns the district's composite courses of study, the participation is required for a particular course, or the participation results in an academic credit, right? Because you can't grade students on things that are happening outside of
but
the school.
But that directed you to another policy. In which
No, all part of the
we're
same
not a club.
Policy.
This is not a club, an association, or an organization.
What's the comment about district staff?
Here we go.
That's just a heading.
Wait, she's not done yet. Okay.
Correct. I was giving you more context and information.
Thank you.
Sponsored by Boys Bass.
So,
but that's not a club.
Continuing on.
No, but it's...
hold on. Now I'm in... hold on. Pardon me, I'm going to click back into the correct policy. There we go. So this is where it says, non-curricular student activities that are initiated by parents or other members of the community may be allowed under the provisions of policy 7510, the use of district facilities. So it doesn't explain where extracurriculars fall in our current policy.
Right.
It mentions that they can, the extracurriculars can use these facilities, the extracurriculars can have events, but it doesn't articulate that in this particular policy for district-sponsored clubs and activities.
It's so none of those.
A similar event that may have happened at Monroe Public, I don't know, and so I'm going to look to all the historians here, would have been like an after-party.
So, like, if Girl Scouts came in, this sounds like a club, association, or organization. We'd be like Girl Scouts coming in, which this doesn't fall in that category.
Well, but this does fall in because this is one of our own sports with an opportunity for an after school with an event. For example, like a PTO. A PTO could do, and maybe has done something. So again, I'm looking to my historians. Any PTO has done anything like a long evening after prom? You know how like schools do after proms? Have we done that here? On our school grounds?
Overnight? To my knowledge, we have not had an overnight event. We have had evening things, but to my knowledge, there hasn't been a full overnight event such as this that I'm aware of.
Okay. And I know
Ryan,
that
I think
some
we had
other...
one when we were in high school.
Some other programs offer lock-ins, but they're during the day. That. Like it's a Saturday afternoon for the band while they're preparing for a festival.
Sure.
So it's mostly rehearsals, but they might have food and they might have a couple games and things like that. But it's during the day.
I think my question is, since it's sponsored by the high school basketball team, are we going to have high school students assisting with the adults that they mentioned? So are we going to have, 17, 18-year-olds along with these 4th through 6th graders?
The only names I see on that third page were
the
coaching staff, the adults.
I would be so much more comfortable if it were an afternoon, if it were a Saturday lock-in, 12 to 5,
Or during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah. Okay, so did we have a motion on the floor?
Yes.
Yeah, we do. Okay, so is there any more discussion on the motion on the floor?
just so that for to close the loop on policy things, so 7510 is just use of school facilities, and that's very straightforward on like what the appropriate steps and processes for articulating like the administrative guidelines for setting up the channels to ask and request facility usage. There's nothing in there that articulates curriculars can do this, extracurriculars can do that, non-curriculars can do this. So there's no further information that would help this conversation in 7510.
Thank you.
Okay. Being said, Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mrs. Taurasi.
Are we voting to?
This is voting to approve it.
Or not?
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
Mrs. Vincent?
No.
Mrs. Williams?
No.
No.
Mr. Sabadini?
No.
Mr. Hatton?
No, and the motion is defeated. Okay. Next, I'll...
Mr. Mopsley, since you were... Your name was on here.
Yes.
I would assume you could communicate with Mr. Hessen that it isn't a universal, we don't want this ever to happen. There are parameters I think we all discussed that might be...
I took some notes.
Make us feel more
all
comfortable.
All-day event, absolutely.
More comfortable. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Next, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw for the second reading and adoption of board policy amendments.
All right. Well, thank you very much, sir. So it is our second reading of our board policies. The board policies have been out to the community. The board, at their second reading at this point in time, would be approving them, and they would go into motion after this. Our first policy is 0131.1, bylaws and policies. Policy 0163, presiding officer. Policy 1430, leaves of absence. Policy 2340, field and other district-sponsored trips. Policy 3120, employment of professional staff. Policy 3120.05, employment of personnel in driver education and community ed. Policy 3430, leaves of absence. Policy 4120, employment of support staff. Policy 4430, leaves of absence. Policy 5136, personal communication devices. Policy 5320, immunizations. Policy 5330, use of medications. Policy 5330.01, epinephrine, auto injectors. Policy 5350, student suicide. Policy 8320, personnel files. Policy 8500, food services. And policy 8510, wellness. To our community members, you can always go on and look at these policies that are presented to the board tonight. Those that are highlighted, you're going to see it in bold, are the new information, and struck out is what is being removed from these policies tonight as a second reading, final reading.
Can I get a motion regarding approval of the second reading of the listed policies?
I move to approve the second reading of the policies as stated.
Support.
Discussion? Hearing none. Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mrs. Meyer.
Yes.
Mr.
Shepard. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, and the motion carries.
And thank you for reading those.
You're welcome. Next, we have,
Next is our second reading of adoption of policy 6320. This one was a separate one because we worked on it and refined it more at our last meeting, and so it was drawn out this way. So this is the 6320, which is our purchasing policy, and the greatest difference that was made in this policy is the addition of word of services and a process on how to address services also. So that was really the primary changes. And this is a second reading and a final reading and will be put into play after the board adopts it.
Okay. Can I get a motion regarding policy 6320, purchasing?
Wow. This is like beaming at the last moment, right?
Okay. I move to approve purchasing policy 6320, effective December 9, 2025, as presented.
Support.
Any further discussion? Any discussion? Hearing none. Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mrs. Meyer.
Yes.
Mr. Sabadini.
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes, and the motion carries.
All right, so our next one is a resolution establishing conditions for maintaining or rescinding the district's selection, Section 31AA, opting in motion. So I'm going to just take one moment to bring a lot of clarity to this. So a week ago, the Board of Education took and opted in to receiving the 31AA funds, and that was simply so that we could do that. This now motion allows for the rescission of that motion should things transpire in the court system to where we can opt out. So for example, one of the questions was, has MDE posted the ability for us to opt out? And that's already available. Cassie went online in the JEMS program yesterday, and it's there. It's ready. All we have to do is click on it, and we're out of receiving the 31AA money. And so that parameter has been met. The other being, too, is that the questions around, I'm going to get into this resolution, is that when we look at what's going on right here, we have that time period from December 4th through the end of the month, through the 30th. And so that's that time where we can opt out for any reason and don't have to give it, just we can step away from it. And it has to be done by the 11:59 on that night. I want to really draw your attention to this. The superintendent is hereby authorized to and directed to submit the rescission form to be published on the MDA website, which they've already published it, so it's there, on December 30th, on or before December 30th, 25, if neither the Court of Claims nor the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan has ruled that the waiver requirement is unenforceable or unlawful by December 30th. So either court system comes out and it fails, this piece of language tells me I'm to remove us from that list. Secondly, though, the superintendent is hereby authorized to and directed to not submit a rescission form should either party file an appeal of the ruling and written notification provided by MDE or the court moving the rescission date from December 30th, 2025 to a later date. If no such written document is provided, the superintendent is directed to submit the rescission form to be published on MDE's website by 11:59. So again, that website, it's already been updated. So when this was created, we were using the information that was provided. So here's the long and the short, and that's why one of the reasons Jeremy's here tonight, he's gonna bring a lot of clarity to this. And so we'll get to a motion, but I gotta go through this information. Question around you guys had a lot of questions. I made sure to get answers from Scott. So Scott is the lead attorney who's on this case, talked with him today. It works like this, from December 4th through December 30th, 11:59. If, and I hate putting it in the universe, we go like this, if something bad happened at Monroe Public Schools, we have that time period to rescind. We don't have to even do it on the spot. He said, listen, wait until the court makes a decision. You have until December 30th, 11:59 to rescind, and that goes back to the original format. The other is that the court system has said that they'll have the answer by the 19th, and if they don't, then you can still take and do your and rescind at that point in time because we would not have an answer. The other is if there's an appeal process, if it's done ahead of time, great. If it's not, still do the rescission. There's going to be a lot of things that will happen, or there's going to be a lot of other communications. I think the other piece of information that is important to know is this, is that all of this, we don't know the number of schools that opted in, okay? But what we do know is that whoever did not opt in, they have no they cannot get to any of the money. The state of Michigan will now disperse equitably those schools that have opted in. If we come through this and we don't win in either court, and we just say, and this is for any school in the state of Michigan, says we are going to opt out while an appeal process happens, great, the money's gonna go back to MDE, but then at that point in time, the schools that had opted in, they're keeping it. So we're still going to be safe down the road if we should win an appeal. But the point of it I was trying to make here is that and this process is just the next step of the ability to rescind. That's all that this is right here. And so we put this together to help you to know, okay, how do we get out of the opting in? So that's what this is giving us, that opt out. Like, hey, we get two no's from the courts, we're out. If we don't get if there is no appeal in the month of December, we're out. And are the two big ones there? I want to just ask Jeremy on this. Did I miss anything on that before we request a motion?
I think you covered all the information.
Awesome. So we're asking the Board of Education.
So are we still at the discussion stage, or are we not?
Share this information. We're going to go there now for you.
Yeah.
So it is a recommendation that we move forward with this resolution that authorizes the superintendent to rescind based on those parameters set forth. We fail in both court systems, we rescind. If we don't have any kind of written documentation, we rescind that of an appeal process. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if we win, it's a moot point. We don't have to do anything.
Okay. Given that explanation, can I get a motion regarding this resolution?
I move to approve the resolution establishing conditions for maintaining or rescinding the district's 31AA opt-in as presented.
Support.
Support. Okay, now board member discussion. Mary or Stacy, any discussion? Gary? Brian?
Yeah.
So to be clear, if this goes beyond December 30th, so this goes into January, based on what we're giving you, do we now come back and make another vote? Because now it's extended past December 30th?
So the expectation is that the...
I know what the expectation is.
If they don't, then we are opting out. Because
we're going to opt out automatically.
We have not met that requirement. By December 30th.
So you're going to automatically opt out if there is no decision made by December 30th.
When the court system went together and they negotiated, that was exactly it, is that by December 30th, this decision would be made, or actually by the 19th, and if it's not, then we're out because we don't know when they'll make that decision. And the other part is after December 30th at 11:59, now we're on the hook. So we opt out if there's no decision.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you.
So... my original concerns from before we got in the lawsuit to before we opted in on the money and, sit where we sit was the fact that the board has made those decisions along the way. There has been considerations, there's been discussion, there has been input from the board on where they stand on these decisions being made. And I think that we say should, could, would, possibly... I don't understand why, which is why I wanted the discussion beforehand, why there isn't a motion that the board will convene at the first sign of any action, whether it's the judge, whether it's any action to come back and say, where do we sit? That's where I sit with it. Like, I would like the board to continue doing what it's done in every step of the way the board have its input. And these options do not give the board any input.
Well, actually, the input is for us to give the authority to Andy to rescind, given the fact, if it wasn't December and the holidays, we would probably have another board meeting scheduled. But there's a risk we would not have a quorum over the holidays based on people's travel plans. And this makes sure this prevents the risk of not, if we couldn't get together and make that rescinding decision, we might be on the hook. So
then
this
I would
gives
like
Andy the,
right.
that
I would authority. Like to amend the motion to be that if we could convene a board quorum to be able to consider the facts as they come out, because when the legislature's involved, we've got the governor, we got the state of Michigan, we got the federal government, we got the courts, we got possibly the appeals courts involved. And then if there is not a possibility where we can convene a quorum, we then authorize Andy to make his decision. I would like to amend that.
I want to just say one thing. It's not my decision, it would be yours. So because the resolution is abundantly clear on what I'm directed to do by you. So it's not my decision.
So we know, I think what I was just indicating is there's a lot of moving parts on this.
Yep.
And because there's a lot of moving parts, we can't calculate every contingency when all of those factors involved, when it's the state government, when it's the federal government, when it's the legal team, when it's the legislature, when it's all of those things, anything could jump into this. And so my thing is, if the board cannot convene, I understand your point, Tom, if the board cannot convene and provide a quorum, then that would have a fail-safe to say then it would fall and Andy would be the decider. Other than that, we've had the board input all the way through, including the opt-in. And I would just like the board to be continue to be able to look at things regardless of what happens at the time, because we just don't know. I mean, I guess we hope to know, but we don't know.
Well, here's the question. The way I understand the resolution is if any of the moving parts goes south, Andy rescinds. There's no, I guess, gray area there. If it doesn't meet all the requirements, then he's going to rescind, period.
Do we have those?
May I chime in, President?
Yeah.
Thank you. Our office was helped in putting this resolution together for yourself and other districts as well. As drafted, as presented to you, there are two circumstances in which you would not rescind. Otherwise, Andy must rescind. That's the way it's worded, is that the board orders him to rescind tonight unless one of two things happens. You win one of the lawsuits. There's a pending federal and a pending state lawsuit. If you win one, great. That would be a declaration that it's unconstitutional to require public employees to give up the right to counsel. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing. The second contingency is if there's a court order entered that says the timeline is pushed back from December 30th, he wouldn't have to rescind by the 30th. But otherwise, you're ordering him to rescind by the 30th.
No matter what else happens,
That's the trigger you're setting
in
place.
So let me get that clear again, right? Because I think I asked that question, and it doesn't feel like that's the same answer. So if it extends beyond December 30th, it's an automatic rescind.
If there is not a clear win before the 30th,
yes,
or a court order that says the 30th is now January
30th. The court orders it to move back.
So unless one of those two things happens, he rescinds before the 30th.
Thanks for clarifying, because I don't think I got that.
So let me catch that. So say this gets extended to January 20th, and right now the rescind date is December 30th. And the court case gets bumped out and the language doesn't change, we would have to rescind even though it goes out. Because you wouldn't want to take the chance. I just don't want to take chance. I'm not as much as a risk taker maybe as some people are here.
It requires the court to mandate the movement of that date. If they don't, if no court order moves December 30th, we have to opt out.
He must sign that rescission order. As presented, this resolution orders him, you will rescind by the 30th unless you win one of the lawsuits or a court order says the date is moved back.
And even if we win the lawsuit and it ends up being appealed, you still would have to rescind out, right? Depending on how the appeal process, because once the judge makes his order and someone, and I'm not legal, I'm just trying to comprehend this. So a judge rules on the case and an appeal comes out, say it's unconstitutional, with the way it's written, an appeal process is filed and nobody touches the date. What happens then? I mean, if the judge rules and says, hey, I've already ruled, and an appeal comes in and it's now continuing, how would that scenario be? You'd have to rescind by the 30th because we can't take the chance.
Your question became from the last time was that if they appeal, does everything go back to the beginning?
So if which side appeals? I have to have clear facts. I'm sorry.
The other side. We're assuming that we win and the other side appeals. So if we win, it's all done in deal.
Yep.
And Andy says, good, I don't have to do anything. We're just going to stay opted in. We get the money. Life is grand. But the other side appeals and files an appeal. Where does that December 30th date fall? It would still be December 30th, even though there's an appeal.
The Court of Claims judges trial court order would still say December 30th.
Right.
And we don't have any inclination of what an appellate court would say at this point about whether they would or would not move that date back.
So in that scenario, Andy says, we win, therefore we don't opt out. So if we win and we don't opt out, but there's an appeal that's filed and we don't opt out, then this is a one and forever. I mean, this is forever net locked back in is what it's originally worded in the 31AA.
Yeah, it's all about when that appeal gets filed. So if they file in December, we all know, but they could file on January 5th.
Right.
We're all in.
Right. That's my point.
But that's where I'm, I guess that's what she's. So
there's the risk.
Through appeal of
that makes sense.
The state.
You can't make conjecture.
Whether the state will appeal if we won, it's getting to be too many degrees out of prognostication for me to kind of make odds on it. I recognize the issue you're raising.
Which is why I think the board should have input, and it's not just on Andy, because if we run into that scenario, we're going to have to make a decision.
We don't want you just to be on the hook, Andy.
Yeah, I got you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. It can be contingent.
But it's on all of us.
Is, say they make the decision to appeal, do they have a time frame they have to file that appeal?
Yes.
What is it?
And what's
that
normally?
21 days.
21 days.
So that would put us.
So it could go out beyond.
It's possible.
December 31st.
It is possible. Okay. I do not speak for the Attorney General's office. I don't speak for the lead counsel that's handling this big lawsuit on behalf of a bunch of school districts. That said, the verbal communication that has been represented to the participants is that the state has verbally represented they're not planning to, but that doesn't. That's not a court order. So it's not a signature.
It is not. No.
Okay.
So do we want to make a friendly amendment?
I offered an amendment.
Well, you have to offer, we already have a motion.
I know. I'm offering an amendment to the motion that if the board can convene in that time frame, that would be our first option to have a discussion rather than send a second.
Since Stacy made the motion, she has to agree to allow the amendment to go forward.
I agree.
Okay. Further discussion? Then we'll vote on the amendment.
Vote on the amendment before we vote on the...
Yes, we have to vote on the amendment first.
Can we hear what the amended motion may be?
Do you need to repeat it?
Jamie needs it.
Yeah. So I'm not going to be word for word with what we currently have, because I think the logistics of this grammar is going to be beyond me right now. But it is the board will convene prior to a decision. If there is a quorum can be met. If no quorum can be met, the totality of the motion will continue as it's written.
Then Andy makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Read it back. Look, because we got to make sure we get this right.
Right.
So, how
there's no decision. I guess that's you'd have to direct.
Motion by Darlus or Mike Lovers.
I don't think this
amended.
No, motion by Stacy.
The amendment.
The original one.
Yes, sorry.
Yes.
Correct. But you're.
The motions can.
We're voting on the amendment.
You're saying you are amending the motion.
Contingency is based on the availability of the Board of Education.
Well, we're.
Which would be no need. Andy is here. You're amending it, but you're still making a new motion.
Because
you're amending it.
I want to vote on the amendment first, right?
No, you have to vote on the amendment first.
It's a friendly amendment.
That's what I said. She's saying no.
Amendment.
Help her out.
No.
Adding the amendment.
We have to vote on adding the amendment.
Yeah, that's it.
So,
please clarify. Tell her.
So we're going to vote first. We don't need the wordage on her.
Yes.
Yes, we
do.
We do.
That's what we're voting on.
We have.
But I thought what you just said was we need a motion to amend Stacy's motion.
No.
Then we make the second motion as the.
No. We would.
You talk.
Okay. No, we have to make. We have to vote on approving adding the amendment to the motion.
Right.
My language.
Which is what we're going to do now, and then once. If that passes, then we vote on the motion as amended.
Right, totality.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right, go ahead.
So we're making a motion to approve, to amend the original motion.
Yeah.
To add the language that if a quorum can be reached prior to a decision being made by the board, that we would do that. If not, if we do not obtain a quorum, then the original motion will be followed.
Yes.
Yes.
That's our motion. That's the board member's motion.
Yeah.
I guess I welcome your opinion on that emotion.
It's legal. It's legal.
Well, from a legal perspective,
Jeremy,
is there complications?
I think I understand the idea that you're articulating. Yeah. Tell me if I've got it wrong. That if you can get a meeting together by the 30th with a quorum, you would like to do that.
Yes.
Yes.
Right? That's the idea. I would suggest making that the modification, that if a quorum of the board is available to meet before the 30th, they will do so. If not, the superintendent is directed in accord with the motion as as written.
You just said it much prettier than me. Thank you, Jeremy.
Try to be helpful.
Did you get that?
Well, I got the recording.
That's why I was speaking slowly and clearly.
Okay. So let's vote on that motion amendment.
Hearing no more discussion, let's have a roll call, Jamie.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Salvini.
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
No.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Yes, and the motion carries.
Now we need to vote.
And now we go back to the original motion as amended. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have a roll call?
Yes, Mr.
Sabatini. Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
No.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Yes, and that motion as amended carries.
All right, so our next item, thank you very much, everybody, is Bid Pack 8, Secure Entry Office Edition and Building Site Updates at Manor Elementary. Mrs. Shook.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Tonight we're asking the board to move to approve the bid for the Secure Entry Office Additions and Building Site Updates at Manor Elementary School at a cost not to exceed $2,470,853. From the Delventhal Company of Millbury, Ohio. This project will be funded by the 2020-2023 Bond Capital Projects Fund and the Site Sinking Fund.
Thank you. Do we have a motion regarding the Manor secured entry?
I move to approve the secure entry at Manor as stated.
Do we have support?
Support.
Board member discussion? I guess I have a question, Cassie. How much is coming out of the site sinking fund?
At this point, approximately $670,000 would be out of the site sinking.
Okay, and the rest
This will be the remaining project out of the bond fund. Okay. So it's going to vary dependent on how much interest is earned and accrued by that time. But
basically, it will probably deplete the bond fund?
Correct.
And we'll pick up the extra with the sinking fund?
That's correct.
Okay.
And part of what's being done at Manor is paving the parent loop, and all of that cost is out of that 670 because that pavement was not included in the bond, so that part of the project specifically...
The sinking fund.
Correct.
That was part of our deal with the city is that we would pave that parent loop entrance, and so we were able to, by putting this part of the whole project, drive that cost down, but it was one bit.
Okay. I do have a question. I pulled the financials 25-26 budget proposal summary, you know, this little chart here, and it listed our ending bond debt balance as 2.2. This is 2.4. You're estimating 600. So my question is, knowing this was coming, was this, you know my question. Go ahead.
So that amount on your 25-26 budget was my estimated ending fund balance for 24-25. This is based on the actual and the outstanding punch list items for previously approved projects.
So those were not included when this was written?
Correct. That fund balance is actually, to date, any remaining amount.
So it'd be less than this?
Correct.
Yeah.
I've taken into account things that are outstanding that were previously approved that I know of to date.
So if we're taking $600,000 out of our site sinking fund, obviously we didn't plan on that.
Oh, no, we knew we were going to have to here take a portion. Just like we did when they did the Custer part, a portion of that was paid out of site sinking, not all bond. We knew that the paving was not part of the bond, so that had to be part of it. But, and so to try to keep the cost, to push the cost down rather than doing separate bids, we put it into this one, and so that's why we knew that the sinking fund was going to cover that pavement. So that pavement, whatever amount we get charged, is what's coming out of sinking fund no matter what.
So we know that costs are going up, so that's part of my question. We're looking at what we're doing with sinking fund. We're looking at $600,000. Do we anticipate, did they anticipate any overage costs in that with the rising cost?
Oh, yes.
Is it already baked into this, what we quote, or is it in addition?
Almost $5 million is it 10%, Dave? I know you guys.
What is your question?
Contingency amount.
The only unknown right now that we have on that project is when they bring up, the, when they redo the asphalt, they're not sure what the aggregate material is going to be, how much they're going to need to redo that. So that's why they gave us a cost per cubic yard. So that could fluctuate a couple thousand depending on what they find when they dig that up.
So this is pretty solid, though. We don't anticipate a big fluctuation in this based on any outliers. Okay.
But remember, I will remind the board, because we experienced this at Custer, when you go digging into the ground, you don't know what you'll find. Oh. And we found a big old drum that cost us a lot of money to remove, and so we don't know what we'll find in front of Manor. It's been quite a few years since that ground has been excavated. So when you do a renovation, you might find something.
And I think to your point, Mrs. Myers, we did allocate in the approved budget for the sinking fund an amount for projects, and this is under that threshold.
Under that threshold. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Mrs.
Yes.
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 Mrs. Myers. Yes.
Mr. Yes.
Mr. Yes, and the motion carries.
All right, so the next one, recommendation for reinstatement.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. We ask the board to consider the recommendation of the Reinstatement Committee on this matter of student discipline and move to accept the recommendation of the committee for a conditional reinstatement of student A, or move to reject the recommendation of the committee and unconditionally reinstate student A, or move to reject the recommendation of the Reinstatement Committee and deny reinstatement of student A.
Do I have a motion regarding the reinstatement of student A?
I move to accept the recommendation of the committee for a conditional reinstatement of student A.
Support.
Discussion? Hearing none. Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Mrs.
Yes.
Mrs.
Yes.
Mrs.
Myers. Yes.
Mr. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and the motion carries.
Next up is HMH, Interreading Decodable Libraries Purchase, K3. Mrs. Joseph.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Tonight, we ask the board to move to approve the purchase of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt Interreading Decodable Libraries for all K-3 classrooms at a cost not to exceed $87,068.42, funded from the 35N grant.
Thank you. Do we have a motion regarding the HMH reading decodable libraries for grades K through 3?
I'll move to approve the purchase of HMH as presented.
Do I have support?
Support.
Discussion? Stacy or Mary, any questions? Carrie? Brian?
Yeah, I guess I would just have a question. I know when we originally funded the HMH, I think we felt like that was an all-in price. Here it is, you get everything. And now I feel like we're kind of being cherry-picked a little bit here. We have a 35N grant, so I know you're going to say it's not going to cost us anything, that's fine.
Yes.
But it still makes me wonder, are there other things hanging out there that we are going to need to purchase so we can kind of know that? So you don't come back to me 2 months from now and there's another one.
Yeah, so just to explain a little bit about this particular purchase. So we currently do have those resources digitally. So students can currently access those resources online. But what we would like to do is to actually have the books that students can have in their hands that they can take home. So it would be giving the students the opportunity to have access to the physical books as opposed to just only having the access to the online component. Yeah, go ahead, Andrea.
So when we purchased the 35M grant, we purchased our tier one curriculum, which was the HMH. These are a supplemental piece, so they're meant to extend. You can use them within the classroom, but they're small groups, or they can be used as a tier two resource, so they extend beyond that initial. So when we purchased the curriculum, you say all in, that's our tier one piece.
Okay.
This would be considered an extension of that tier
two. Okay, so now this is tier two. Are there other things in tier two that we would be looking to purchase at some point, or is there something beyond tier two?
There could be.
Sure. That's how they, that makes some money off that. Yeah, I get it.
So there could be, but 35N grant, which is the REED grant, excellent advanced districts grant that we received. It was very specific in what you use, and it was meant to go alongside of the 35M grant, which was for that tier one curriculum. So with this, we had to write a plan, and within that plan, we included the purchase of these decodable texts and then the lessons that we're doing in expulsion as part of our full scope of our plan. This has already been approved through that grant as an allowable expense, so we're just bringing it to you tonight. So
thank you for the context. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Joseph.
So if I understand, this is to purchase physical books for the students?
Correct.
And it would cover all our students, the number of books?
Well,
it covers, grades, right? It's a set. So not every student needs one of these. These are meant to continue to build upon foundational skills
okay.
and provide the support for students who need it. So every student in the classroom that needs
okay.
it would provide enough that teachers could service the students in their classrooms.
Those that need it?
Yes.
Okay.
And it would also service all classrooms throughout the district, so all K-3 classrooms would receive it.
Okay. Thank you.
I was with Brian. I was when he talked about, it says student digital licenses. So it made the impression that these are online, because what is a student digital licenses for each of these grades? There's teacher digital licenses that are included. So what are those? So this does include digital content as well?
Digital as well.
So it's not all just physical books?
This would be the actual physical pieces that we get, and then teachers have access to some digital pieces as well that they can push out to, if there's something that they need a student to complete, they would have access to that. So that's where we have those licenses. There is a digital component, but we're purchasing the actual physical.
Yeah. I know back in, I pulled up my notes, back in June of 24, there was a major purchase of decodable texts. And there was like a lot
those
of them.
Those were purchased, those were the jump rope readers, and those went along with our units of study, our previous curriculum. Those are still being utilized. They are decodables, and decodable texts are wonderful. This set, when we think about that,
Did we talk about, so my notes look back in, I'm trying to get a look at the date of it, that we talked about these decodable libraries. When we purchased this, or we chose this one, did we talk about the fact that there would be these add-ons? Because I thought I remember us talking about, because, you know, I'm a stickler when we spend, you know, $100,000+ on materials that we're now buying for another program. And the usage of those. I thought that was like, we can use those, because that was the whole professional development thing. Those were not just one and done. Those are things
Correct.
That carry on.
Yes. So the books that you purchased.
Because this is like a $100,000 purchase here.
You're talking about the previous purchase,
this
correct?
Purchase combined total, there's 82, and then the other one's like 21 or something. What's the total? Andrew, it's like
104.
104,000. I mean, it's a significant amount of money. That's why I'm asking. We just bought those, like, they're a year old, year and a half old. So, and that was a high dollar amount, $100,000 plus two.
So is the question, are we still using that purchase of the $104,000?
No, that's the current request. That's the current request. I didn't add up how much we spent on the previous one because it was all pieced out. Every single school had a different amount. I didn't go through and add them up, but.
So, yes, teachers are currently using those jump rope readers in their classrooms right now. So those are still being used for small group instruction. The purchase that we're asking you to approve tonight is specifically developed and created by the HMH curriculum that was purchased back in September. So the new curriculum. We did have the opportunity to apply for a grant and be able to have them say yes, that we could use this as an allowable expense. So we felt that it was important to be able to get as many books in the hands of kids as we could.
Oh, we agree. It's not that I don't agree. It's just that I want to make sure that those things that we do purchase are continuing to be utilized in the classroom.
Absolutely.
And it's not, okay, they're done. We've moved on. Now we're going to go do something else.
No,
that was my question, because that's why I went back and looked. Because, you know, sometimes I think it happened yesterday and it happened 5 years ago. So that's
right.
Why I went back and checked on that.
Right. No, and... Yeah, and we agree with you. Like, any purchase that we make needs to be a good, solid instructional purchase that, in this, in the case of the jump rope reader, that it outlives that curriculum time that we had the units of study in place. So with the HMH, yes, they can still use those jump rope readers.
Okay. All right. Okay. Right. Right. So that covers all of this.
That covers.
And that uses the funds that were
correct.
Allocated.
It's
yes. One of those one
so
and done that we talked
and
about
the
earlier.
Coming up.
Okay.
Yes.
So with the HMH though, there are student consumables, right? So like there's little workbooks that we
correct.
Will have to be replenished from year to year. There's than the original purchase, right? That's what I'm looking at right now. I just wanted to like share for
thank you
for
noting
bigger
that.
Context. Yeah. So that's like an ongoing cost of the program as well. So yes, the digital assets will have to be renewed, but also there's like student consumables that will also have to be repurchased.
I thought you just said they were part of the program. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that, yes, is that going to continue to be paid out of 35M for
the next, and Cassie, 3 years, I believe?
Because it went hand in hand with
yeah.
The
35J. I know the 35M is either 2 or 3 years. It's an ongoing grant. This
you got the J for that, then you got the M for that.
That 3 years.
Yeah.
You know what? So, Andrea, the anticipation is our numbers are so high. We get the next 2 years grants, and then we are steaming into that final third year, and the world is ours. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
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 Yes, and the motion carries.
All right, our next one, letter G, HMH into reading decodable libraries purchase 4th through 5th grade. Mrs. Joseph.
Great, thank you, Mr. Shaw. So tonight we ask the board to move to approve the purchase of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt into reading readers with take and teach lessons for all 4th and 5th grade classrooms at a cost not to exceed $27,290.42. Funded from the 35N grant.
Can I get a motion regarding the HMH reading decodable libraries for grades 4 through 5th?
I move to approve the purchase of the Into Reading readers and the Take to Teach lessons for all fourth and fifth grade classrooms at a cost not to exceed $27,290.42, funded from the 35N grant.
Support.
Discussion? Hearing none. Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Scabadini.
Yes.
Mrs. Drassi.
Yes.
Mrs. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and the motion carries.
All right, and now we're going to get into letter H, the Navarre property sale. Mr. Fritz, you want to come up to the microphone? So we have Tom Fritz with us tonight. He is a local realtor, and I'm going to ask Tom to take a moment and share his history with Monroe over some of our properties, and then and talk a little bit about then the purchase agreement that has been disseminated to our board.
Yeah, okay. So I worked with the school board for maybe 6 years, 2015 to 21. We looked at a portfolio of properties that were underutilized, to be fair to say. Vacant land, the old Christian C school, back in town site, Navarre Field, which is on the agenda for today. Among some others. So what's happened is somebody's come forward and expressed interest in purchasing Navarre Field. At the time, years ago, we had that marketed up in the 400,000 range. The school board at that time priced it a little high because they didn't have so much motivation. It was like interest in exploring property values of the portfolio, like overall, all the properties. This one came in, I think we might have priced it about $400,000. At the time, the valuation was lower than that. At this point, so some of the marketing has existed out there that, you know, you put it online, it just kind of stays there, right? And so someone has reached out and said, you know, I'm interested, and so we have an offer in front of us. I think, did you distribute?
Yes, they have the purchase. Yeah.
Just to clarify, when you say $400,000, that also included the parcel we've already sold.
Well, true. Yeah. So we put it. Well, the school board. So not to, fair to say we, school board put it out there at $400,000, thinking that, wow, you know, if it works out, that'd be cool. You know, so that's where that number came from, really. And I know we've discussed, like, where was it at, or, you know, what was the valuation when we talked about it? And you know, I'll be careful to say, you know, it wasn't $400,000. That was in the vicinity of that. Again, it largely goes to motivation. You know, how bad do you want to sell it? What I know for sure is that, you know, the data that I have and what the school board shared at the time was that the income doesn't justify valuation at that level, right? If you look at a per acre developable land, you know, if you look at 30,000 an acre at the time, might have put it at, you know, $300,000 or so. You've sold some of that already. So, again, I'm especially careful here. I think we should talk more about what we have in front of us as opposed to the valuation.
Yep.
Okay. So you sold some of it already to Habitat for Humanity. And what we have in front of us is, you know, a little over $300,000. For the balance. What's really easy to say is, is that the income value doesn't justify that price, but the per acre value, yeah, it gets close, right? So it's a drain on the school resources, right? Am I okay?
Yeah.
Okay, Andrew, with,
you're okay with this,
going yeah. there and this, right? Yeah, so, but the school system isn't in a place to generate revenue per, right? Per, right? It's all about education.
Fair enough.
And sports is certainly all of that. Yeah, but we have somebody that is interested in making a purchase. They've signed an offer for $315,000. And what that nets after expenses with the sale is about $303,000. Habitat bought some already. It was in the tune of $80,000. Yep. It puts you in the vicinity of the original target, but this goes back a few years, of the 400,000 range, right? So you hit that. Got a serious offer, cash offer, earnest money deposit, no inspection. The intention of this particular purchaser is to keep it as it is and enhance the property and generate more revenue with new leases. So he accepts what you have in place already from your tenants, right? So.
I said that was our question. We all concurred that was our question, so thank you.
Great. Wonderful, so I'll just stop and take questions about that.
The intention of the purchaser is to keep the property as is,
yes,
and make improvements to the property.
Yes.
And those that currently use it can do it. Sorry.
So whether that's SMCC, who currently uses the field,
yes,
our middle school, I assume, has some use there as well, correct?
We do, and that's why I have Kyle with us tonight, because okay, we actually have other plans for how we'll
okay, that would be my one
not one. Use okay, that facility. We have other facilities we're going to look at.
Okay.
And
would we become a renter?
Nope. No.
I don't want to be a renter.
We're not in that world. Not in that
just
space.
Just thought I'd ask.
So if you have, so if you can give me a second here. So I'm going to, I think, address some questions right here that the board should have. So one of the things that we have to think about is if we make this sale happen, the process would be tonight's only discussion. It would be approved in our first meeting in January. The other part is when it comes to our middle school athletics, because it's come about, we had to come up, we got an idea for next year. Our first goal is to make it baseball, softball, and that's the biggest one. Baseball, softball, easy for parents and students. And so trying to make it so that's together. And so Kyle's going to share that. But we also have to understand that we are also looking at further that these monies may need to be used to help enhance athletics, like at the high school, because of the pulling things together out there, because if we're going to, we take away Navarre, okay, that well, how does that play in?
So but everything from is moving out to the high schools.
We're trying to move a lot of okay, all of our, a lot of stuff out to the high school. Just so we have a plan. Yeah, we have a plan for middle school football. We've been devising a plan for middle school baseball, softball, and so Kyle's going to talk about that. When so from our lens, we would not be using the Navarre field. We did reach out to SMCC and have shared with them that this is on the table, and so they're aware who the buyer is, and they can make their decisions about what they're going to do in the future for facility usage. The last part, and then when you have any questions for him, then we'll get Kyle up here to speak, is for Habitat, because remember we had to actually carve out a little bit more property right there. It came out to that we put in our pocket. I think, I appreciate what you're saying, the sale price, but what was it we actually put in our pocket? So from the Habitat sale, we put in our pocket $86,362. On this one, you're looking at about $303,000. So you're looking almost at $390,000 roughly. And so before, if we would have sold it for $400,000, you would have had the two realtor fees, you would have had, and so that number, so we're actually about $15,000 to $20,000 better in this scenario by them being split out. So if we're looking at it, what does that mean for us here, okay? So are there any further questions for Tom or how this plays out? Thank you for coming tonight. Yeah, sorry for such a warm room. I saw you get up a couple times and step out to cool down.
Oh, so it's just not normal for me to sit still. So I was listening, but I was just up.
It's not normal for us to be warm, so there you go.
Oh, goodness.
All right.
So thank you very much. Like I said, our next board meeting, I think, is January the 13th. And at that point in time, the recommendation will be made to the board, and the board will make a decision there.
Didn't I say there was 9 days on an acceptance or something on there, seven or nine days?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking. And my recommendation for the board is to accept the offer contingent on full board approval at your next meeting, because I understand that you want to go out to the public and engage them on this. So I would like to have something, you know, like a formal acceptance, but with whatever you need to do
with final
to make
approval.
It suitable
so this is
to your purpose.
Final approval at our January 13th board meeting.
Right.
Makes sense.
And you're writing the language up.
Yeah, the recommendation is that the Board of Education approve this purchase agreement as a contingent agreement with final approval on January 13th, 2026.
I move to do what Andy just said.
Thank you.
Support.
Thank you.
Any further discussion from the board members? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr.
Sabatini. Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Yes, we've become less of a landowner.
Yeah, so even though you approve this, I want Kyle to share because it's still, you know, you're going to get, you all are going to get questions. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen to baseball? What are we going to do?
We did not buy it. We did not approve it yet.
Nope, but we want to make sure you have information.
Information.
Oh.
Understood. So currently, if you're looking at baseball, that's what we're doing in the springtime at Navarre Fields right now. We're playing baseball there, 7th and 8th grade baseball. And then softball plays at Rossler Field. So we're at two different locations. So when we're playing someone in our league, let's say in the springtime we play a lot of Huron League teams, so Riverview. They'll get their bus and they drop off at the boys' team at Navarre, then they take their girls' team over to Rossler. One thing that we thought of with this opportunity is to be able to take them to one location. So we've contacted the city of looking at Munson, still kind of in the works, not had that full conversation with them yet, but our best conversation we've had so far is with the township, John Manor and Al Barron, and just looking at Stone Cold Fields and what they have available to us. And it looks like from our conversation, there's four diamonds there that we'd be able to practice at. We'd be able to have our construction class build a shed for us to have, you know, buckets of, you know, balls that we can use out there and all of our equipment that we need, might need at the facility, hang a banner that says home of Monroe Middle School baseball, softball. So we're at that stage with them, at least talking with them and getting that work out. And being out there, also know it's designed for a facility like that. If it rains in the morning, sometimes at Navarre, it's a canceled game because it just does not drain well to play baseball on it. But at Stone Cold, it'll drain through because it's made for that. So that's the option. So that's baseball, softball. That's kind of the hope to be able to move that out there and make that work for their practices and games. And then looking at football, because right now the last 2 years, we've already moved all of the middle school football games to the high school on the turf field on Tuesdays. So they play three home games. So we've been able to make that work with our soccer and football schedule where we go on the back practice field while they're playing. That's been nice because we can get over there and see them as coaches too a little bit and get people to a little bit better facility for themselves too. So we're already playing there, but we are practicing and using the locker room facility at Navarre. So that's probably the biggest piece of it is, you know, we got 70 to 80 7th or 8th grade football players there that practice there. So we would, looking at what we would have to do, we'd have to have a bus that would take them to the high school if that's where we decide that they should be at, and then make sure we can reinvest and have a spot for them to have to store their equipment, you know, when they're not using it for that night. So, you know, even right now, going at a home game at the high school, the kids get to the Navarre field, get on the bus, go to the high school, play a game, get bused back to Navarre field, put their stuff in a locker, parents pick up in Navarre field. So it kind of takes all that out of the need for the parents as well, too. So those are the two main things that we use it for middle school sports.
What's up with 5th and 6th grade? I know when they moved yep. over there was conversations about their ability to do sports. So.
Sure. So our 5th and 6th graders over there at Kantrick, we had the Junior Trojans that was able to take under the umbrella of Monroe Community Education. So we helped oversee that. We have the Junior MBA that's coming through, that's going through Monroe Community Education. We offered volleyball this year through there. We're ramping up some things for the springtime to have like a sport offering. So it's an after school, come on out. I've seen it, you know, seventh graders come to a tryout for baseball or softball, and some of them sadly haven't picked up a mitt yet. So, you know, getting them out there and getting them to start getting those skills. So we want to call it Trojan Skill Builders out there. So that's one thing we're working on for this spring to really have them do. And then increase those participation numbers there too. And then our sixth graders that are there can still do cross-country swimming, wrestling, and track. So I anticipate our track numbers to be pretty large this spring with sixth graders.
Can you supply
too.
Transportation for that from the school? Is that what we included in our plan?
Okay. As long as
that's
we have,
still a thing.
As long as we have buses and drivers,
I
yes.
get where that's going. Yes.
So that
you got everyone home first, and then,
I got it.
Then we go there.
On a T, put it right there for you.
We need more buses. That's
yep.
what
Well, not so. More buses. Sometimes it's more drivers.
Yeah. yeah.
It's more combination. Could be a combination.
Yeah. There. Thank you for including yeah, that. No I just wanted people to know that you had stuff going on there.
Sure.
Yeah, and so one of the things we're going to be working on, though, is a site plan for Monroe High School for those facilities out there, because having between football and the middle school baseball and softball, if we could figure out a way to make that all work on that one campus, well, then you're not renting. The other, and so and it helps out logistically. The best scenario, though, again, is like heading down to Stone Cove is really nice. The other factor for us as we think about it, we know that our annual cost is roughly $65,000 at Navarre. And when we have to get a field ready for baseball, we're out there mowing, we're out there lining. The cool thing is at Stone Cove, we're not sending people. And so that does.
Very, very small amount. It's around $35 to $40 per game. So it's going to be under $1,000. It's like if Navarre doesn't get sold, I want to move them out there. Like it just makes more sense, anyways.
Yeah.
It's a better facility.
Just curious,
so it kind of led us to that conclusion.
But what
they've always been very.
What helps is it frees
up. Yeah, they were great. John was great there.
Our maintenance guys in the spring too.
Yeah, frees those guys up.
It worked out very well that way. So Kyle, truly appreciate you coming forward tonight and sharing what we're doing at the middle school level. So again, Darla, to your point, I appreciate that. Is yes, the sale of Navarre property is contingent upon that next meeting right there. But at least now you have information you can give out to people when asked.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, next on the agenda is old business. Since we have no old business tonight, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw for his second superintendent comments.
I will make this fast. Tomorrow's a half day, and of course, seems like this happens second time now. There's weather called for tomorrow, so we'll see how that rolls. I read a report today. All it has to do is slide about 20 miles south, and it could change a lot of stuff for us. So we'll see at about 4:30 tomorrow morning what's going to be. The winter play, Friday, December the 12th, is opening night for Monroe High School Drama Club's production of a holiday classic, It's a Wonderful Life. Showtimes are Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m., Sunday at 2. Lots of holiday events are on your calendars. We have the gala again this spring, and that's our Kindness Gala, and that's Friday, March the 13th. So that's out there already. Holiday break is December 20th through January the 4th. And I'm really not liking saying this one, but our next meeting is in January. We got that Monday night on the 12th, organizational meeting on the 13th, and 2026 is already here. So that's all I have to say, sir.
Okay, thank you. Public commentary. Do we have any tonight, Carrie?
We do. We have a few. I'm going to just call you up in the order that they were here placed in front of me. You get 3 minutes each, and I'll let you know where you're at on time. So, Mr. Lechner, you're first.
Good
Good evening. First, I'm not sure if you guys know me at all. A few of you do. I've been a part of Monroe since I've been 5 years old. I've lived here my whole life. I've supported this town. I've supported the high school. I still support the high school. I have a lot of respect for several faculty members, including the principal, several teachers. My daughter loves the school. She loves the teachers. What she doesn't love is the lack of transparency in what happened September 9th. When we allowed, our faculty member allowed and had prior knowledge of a male coming into Monroe High School to play our varsity volleyball team, and did nothing to protect them, my daughter, or the team. They gave us no transparency or no opportunity at all. So I just have a few questions, and that's not just from me or my daughter, that's from every parent in the district and every child. The first question is, what specific written policies and physical safeguards are you putting in place immediately to guarantee that no male will ever walk into a female locker room, ever? That's their safety zone, right? That if they walk in there knowingly and being surrounded by their coaches, their faculty, their friends, do they have to walk in on eggshells and wonder if there's a male in that locker room? Do they have to worry about if our athletic director knows or doesn't know and is willing to help or give our daughters and the family members a heads up on there may be a male in the locker room? We need to figure out how we can prevent this moving forward. And it's not about the Privacy Act. This is about the Transparency Act. No one's asking for a player name, a number, an age. We're asking to let the parents know and let the females know if we have knowledge of a biological male competing against our children, and who in God's name would allow that person in the locker room and have knowledge. Second question is, what actions are going to be taken to ensure the faculty and the admin at Monroe, who's allowed this and who knew about this, what's going to happen? How are they going to be held accountable? What are we doing to save not just this time, the future of our children, the next time, that next bathroom, that next locker room? What are we going to do to take these steps to make sure we're transparent with the parents and the student athletes? We've preached and protected our kids since they were born. We teach and preach to them to do the right thing. My daughter doesn't see race, she doesn't see gender, she sees good people, as I do. But when you have good people turn to a bad agenda, you lose focus on one thing, and that's to prioritize our kids' safety, to prioritize how we're gonna help them excel in life, in school. Political agendas have no business in school, they never have. And it's an uphill battle, we all know that. But my battle as a father is to protect my daughter and my son and every female athlete moving forward. So on behalf of every parent, that not only in our district, Celine, I mean, I've talked to hundreds. What are we gonna do at my school, my daughter's school, the school that I still support, the faculty that I still support, what are we gonna do to make sure everyone's safe, including the faculty? What can we do moving forward? That's all I've got, guys.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. No. Sean, you know, we don't interact during these, but we will follow up.
I kind of got that this last time.
Okay.
I really appreciate your guys' time. Thank you.
Next up, we have Bill Lavoie.
Bill Lavoie, I don't know if I could give my address, 225 Maywood, Monroe, Michigan. Also love the school, been a big public school supporter. However, I have some issues with people who love schools that decide to sue them. So that's my first comment. I also believe in transparency, and I also think that politics should not have any place in education. But when there's press conferences with political candidates in front of courthouses in the city, that is, to me, that's politicizing an issue. Again, my opinion, maybe some people disagree with me, but that's my opinion. So I'm here to give my opinion. As far as transparency goes, I'd like to, and I know you can't answer these questions, but I'd like to, and if I have to FOIA it, I'll FOIA it or ask for it or whatever. I'm looking for what this lawsuit is going to cost this school district. That's what I think, as far as transparency goes, how much money it's costing, and what budget does that come out of? I heard some things with insurance, right? I don't know if insurance covers some of that stuff or something else, but I think that's an important piece of some of this and what this costs. And I was here the last meeting, I think I came to the board, and I think it was a great idea, paid for athletics. Is the defense of this lawsuit, because it happened with the athletic department, coming out of the athletic department budget? And I don't know, you know? So it's one of those things where I'd be interested in knowing where that's gonna come from. My daughter also participates in sports. I think that she's never felt any kind of safety issue with some of this stuff that apparently happened, although she was not on the volleyball team. But my point is that it's been politicized, and it's being politicized, I think, by a certain group of people. So that's pretty much what I have to say. But I think it should be publicly acknowledged how much this lawsuit and the defense is going to cost the school district. Thank you.
Again, Bill, we will get back to you with your questions.
And then last one we have is Laura Perry.
Hi, thank you guys for having me up tonight. My name is Laura Perry. I grew up in the Monroe Public School System, attending Manor Elementary, then Monroe Middle School. And a fun fact for you guys, I was the first ever named girl captain of the co-ed Monroe Middle School and Cantrick team. So I fully understand the dynamic and the scientific differences of male and female athletes. I played varsity soccer and cross country for Monroe High and earned a soccer scholarship to play NCAA collegiate soccer in Iowa. In grad school, I established the varsity girls soccer team at Ottawa Hills, and I am a 6-year varsity head coach at St. Mary's Catholic Central, where I develop female athletes and have a proud number that continue on to obtain athletic scholarships of their own to continue to play at the next level. Women's athletics is worth protecting so that future female athletes may have the same growth opportunities that my girls and I have been afforded. I share all of this because I believe our school board must take proactive action to protect the integrity, fairness, and safety of girls' athletics at Monroe Public Schools. As you are aware of the formal Title IX complaint that has been filed with the Monroe Public Schools and the U.S. Department of Education, the complaint highlights a growing problem in Michigan. Schools and athletic organizations are being forced to choose between conflicting state and federal guidance. That's why politics are involved here. And those choices have direct consequences for the safety and rights of our female athletes. What should concern every board member and parent is that the MHSAA has chosen a path that violates federal Title IX protections. Our district cannot afford to operate in this gray area. We cannot wait for another controversy, another complaint, or another preventable breach of privacy. We need clarity and we need leadership. And I believe that we have that leadership here at this board. Tonight, I'm formally asking this board to adopt a clear and district-wide policy that outlines exactly how Monroe Public Schools will respond if a biological male seeks to compete in girls' athletics or access girls' athletic spaces. This policy should be made clear that Monroe Public Schools will follow federal law, uphold Title IX as written and intended, and maintain sex-separated athletics to ensure competitive fairness, student safety, and privacy. That includes not allowing biological males to compete on girls' teams and not placing our female athletes in situations where they must compete against biological males on an all-female team, especially when so jeopardizes their safety and well-being. Monroe Public Schools owes it to our students and to our families to establish its positions before another situation arises. Thank you for this time. I really love Monroe Public Schools and all that you do. Thank you to the board members. I know how tirelessly you guys work. And I offer my assistance to the board in any way possible to expedite this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Is that it? Okay. Board member commentary. Start with Mary.
none tonight. Thank you.
Stacy?
I just want to thank everybody for coming. We don't have an audience, so it's kind of nice to see some faces.
Carrie?
Oh, yes. My husband has been updating me with the boys' swim meet tonight. They're at Woodhaven, and Monroe swept that meet tonight against Woodhaven and Dundee. So really excited. That's the first one, and now we're off. Also got to see a lot of the groups perform at Mathis Tree Farm this weekend. It was wonderful, very talented, really got you in the spirit. I was privileged and honored to accompany them and their instruments all the way to Orlando in a big old, big as you can get, U-Haul truck. It was not as uncomfortable as I thought it was going to be. Yes, and it wasn't snowing, so I did catch a few naps. Chip drove the whole way, both ways. We didn't stop to stay overnight. We had planned to, but we were just so concerned about something happening to that truck and the instruments, and yeah, that was scary. We have lots of graduates performing with the college band on Monday, and of course, many more performances next week, so hope to see you there.
Okay. Brian?
Yeah, I've been reading the book, The Last Lecture by Randy Pouch, and I've read it a few times, and I always like to go back and read it every once in a while. And this comes to play, and last night we were talking about the D-minus grades and the CRs and the CAs, and he tells a wonderful story in there about a coach he had, and I'm going to just read verbatim what he says, and I think this plays into what we all believe, but self-esteem is not something you can give. It's something they have to build. There is really only one way to teach kids how to develop it. You give them something they can't do, they work hard until they find they can do it, and you just keep repeating the process. And, you know, I hope that we will continue to look at ways that we raise that bar while not hurting people in the process, but also pushing people to where they don't think they can go, because that's how people do grow. So that's all I have.
Darla?
Everybody's got such nice topics, and I'm going to apologize in advance for my topic, but it's a real topic. I just want to highlight, and I'd like the board to take this topic up and considering the time of the year is, and it's related on student suicide, and those rates tend to statistically go up, and during this time, you know, kids are out of school and all those things. But I also want, and I pulled our policy today, and I know we updated it, but I'd also like to look into reinforcing the usage of a program that we are using at Monroe Public School, Signs of Suicide. And I would just like the administration and challenge them to implement some of this before the kids head out for the break, and keep everybody safe. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Just a couple of things. Just a reminder to the board, Wednesday night we have the ISD meeting on truancy. I think that's obviously
that's
very
tomorrow.
Yeah, it's
that's
Wednesday.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
That's
okay.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway, I did send out some information earlier that obviously truancy is not a problem not only in Monroe High School or Monroe Public Schools, but also across the state of Michigan compared to some of our surrounding states. And obviously, if the kids aren't in school, grades are going to suffer, as well as behavioral issues and other things. So hopefully we can come up with some solutions countywide. It's obviously a countywide program on tomorrow night. Yeah,
that is a great article, and my homework tonight is to delve into that article and just grab some data out of it, because it really was a good
article.
There's
some good comparative
information. Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yeah. Just on a personal note, and I've told this to a couple of people, my wife and I are heading to Washington, D.C. on Thursday. Saturday is what they call Wreaths Across America. We've done this before in 2019. We'll be laying wreaths on graves in Arlington Cemetery. Here in Monroe, they're having, it's really across the country, so here in Monroe at Veterans Park, they're going to have a similar, although smaller version of that, so encourage people.
Do you have a time at all?
I'm not sure. I know it's Saturday. I'm not sure what time it is. There's signs up at Veterans Park that probably has it information. Yeah. So encourage, if you have the time, do that. It's certainly very worthwhile. Last thing is we have our, call it our meeting on in January for organization. I did send out some comparative proposals for the schedule next year. Please get back to me with feedback on that so that that's something we'll vote on in January. And any other...
The calendar.
The calendar, okay. Yeah. Proposals for the calendar. And then any other questions or proposals you have for the organization. So that really completes our agenda, our open agenda. We are going to go into closed session. We have a request for closed session. And just information to the public members, once we come out of closed session, we're just going to go into adjournment. So there really will be nothing additional after we come out of closed session.
After we have a 5-minute break before we go to closed session?
Yes, we will take a 5-minute break. That's a good idea. Okay.
Do we need
47? We will come back into session. And can I get a motion to go into closed session?
Move to go into closed session.
Do I have support?
Support.
Any discussion? Then, Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Sabadini.
Yes.
Ms. Tarassi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Heck.
Yes, and the motion carries. Once the doors are closed, we will...